Positive Regression, a motorsports analytics podcast. I'm Alan Cavana, joined as always by David Smith. On this episode, the third annual Crew Chief Draft. David and I put our scouting talents to the test, assembling the team we think will deliver most during the season. But of course, we have our own twist to it. Plus, Denny Hamlin, no longer a free agent. What it means to him, Joe Gibbs Racing, and even more importantly, the remaining free agents. But first, as always, this is episode 89 of Positive Regression. This is the Jim Sauter edition. David, Jim Sauter, the patriarch of the Sauter Racing family. We know they hail from Wisconsin. And, looking at his baseline numbers, they're pretty interesting, David, for Jim Sauter. He didn't really hit the National Cup stage until age 37, pretty late in a career. He made 76 starts at the highest level, many of them in a number 89 car. But clearly, David, there's more to it than just that, because the Sauter name clearly lives on and we know it and we love it. Why?
Yeah, the Sauter name and Jim specifically, he was part of that Wisconsin short track racing, I don't want to call it mafia, but a rat pack maybe, with Dave Marcus and Dick Trickle, and that crew held tight. They won on short tracks together. They formed the IROC test group together, Jim Sauter integral in shaking down and preparing the 12 identically prepared cars. And his short track record, over 20 wins and two championships in the old ArtGo Challenge series. He was also a winner and a fixture in the ASA series. Maybe some of our older listeners can remember a time when those were televised. And Alan, sort of a cool full circle story for Jim Sauter, but one of his biggest adversaries on the short track scene was Joe Scheer Sr. Alan, you're aware of the partnership that we've seen over the last recent years, Johnny Sauter and Joe Scheer Jr., a longtime formidable championship winning driver crew chief pairing in the truck series, which when you consider the origins feels really special and something that was a long time coming.
Yeah. And I mean, just knowing the Sauter name, and I just learned a lot from you, David, but you know, racing is a family sport. And so knowing there's that lineage all the way back to the Midwest, correct me if I'm wrong, David, didn't all four of them race in either Xfinity or truck race at one point?
He had three sons reach the national level, and a nephew, Travis Sauter, also compete. You know, the Sauter brood, real life, cheaper by the dozen, 12 children
wow.
For Jim Sauter. How about that? So we have an idea of what he
and
did.
And Mrs. Sauter. Let's not leave her out of the equation, David.
Yeah, but yes, to turn out that the fact that Sauter is still sort of this marquee name on the Wisconsin short track scene, and that is a big deal. Late models in Wisconsin is a birthright for some of those drivers. All started with Jim, the patriarch, and I pulled him for episode 89. I had the racing champions, Evan Rude, Jim Sauter car. It was kind of a baby blue, and that thing, because it was the only number 89 in my collection, that was perennially in young David Smith's races on the kitchen floor. Had staying power, beautiful car, and good story, good racing family.
Yeah, man, nice pull there. I admittedly don't know the other Sauters other than Johnny. Are they all cut from the same cloth, if you know what I mean? Would they all have sensors on their radio if we could listen to them right now?
Jay Sauter, Tim Sauter, I think they all had their own individual characteristics. I don't know if they flew off the handle as quickly as Johnny. They did approach some races with a mild mannerness to them, but they were all pointedly aggressive behind the wheel. So I think there was a trademark within the lineage.
Good stuff. Episode 89 of Positive Regression, the Jim Sauter edition. Let's get to it, David. It's our favorite time of year because it's just a reminder. We've been around. This is our third season of Positive Regression, which means it's the third season for the third annual Crew Chief Draft. David, we do this based on green flag pit cycles, which, yes, if you are a first-time listener to this or just getting into positive regression, we know you watch racing. We know you see pit stops happen during green flags. Well, what's happening there is more than just pit stops. It is strategizing. It is gaining positions, losing positions. And David, that's an important aspect to racing.
It is. And, you know, for folks that are that have just come to us, we can explain kind of the game that we're doing. We'll get into the rules here in a bit. But in NASCAR, there are two different kinds of pit stops. The one that you see maybe the most of, or there's the most drama behind, are the caution flag stops. The simple explanation between those and green flag stops, which is what we're going to focus on tonight, is the difference between the two. Under caution, it matters how you pit. Under green, it matters when you pit. And timing is everything under green flag conditions. A well-strategized stop will see a car take advantage of the tire fall off or lack thereof on the racetrack. It'll also, and this is prevalent in IndyCar, but doable in NASCAR, but recognize when your pit road exit will reward you with clean laps. And an example of this we saw last year at Pocono. Chris Gabehart did this with Denny Hamlin. This is how they beat Kevin Harvick and Rodney Childers, getting onto a track where you're able to encounter little to no traffic in front of you. You're able to rip off those fast lap times on new tires. That does a lot of good for the ensuing run. And Alan, I think we're actually going to see that with the increased road course schedule this season, a lot more of it. And it's something that I look forward to tracking and discussing here on Positive Regression. But those green flag stops, they yield positional gains. If you are good and there is room to improve your lot within the running order, you will gain spots. Unsuspecting teams with poor strategy lose those spots, either because they were outsmarted or because a caution fell in a way that boxed them in. And either way, it is spots lost on the racetrack. And those gains, those losses, that is what we are watching out for. That is what we are going to count all season long in this contest.
Yes. And to put it simply, David, I mean, what you're saying is some crew chiefs are better than others when it comes to decision making. And we know this because you track it throughout the season on Motorsports Analytics, and the numbers tell a story. The story they tell us is that some crew chiefs make better decisions about when, as you said, to pit and when not to pit. And the results of those decisions can mean track position and can mean better results for their drivers. So this is something that very much matters across the course of a season. And we are each going to try to assemble a team that does it the best and adds up all those gains and looks to have the best toward the end of the season. And we're going for bragging rights, aren't we?
We are. And for dinner, loser buys the winner dinner. Wish it was something a little bit more than that, but there's no no feature in Food and Wine magazine, and no, you know, 250 grand furnished by San Pellegrino. We are not Top Chef, but if there's any crossover between NASCAR and Top Chef, I think we've got the niche for that. But we can roll right into the rules here, Alan.
Sure.
Yeah. You and I are each selecting four crew chiefs apiece in a snake style draft, and the goal here, as we've discussed, amass track position during green flag pit stops. The biggest positional net among our teams of crew chiefs is declared the winner. So you're going to hear us throw out some names that, yeah, you might not hear mentioned too often on Fox or NBC this year, but that's part of the fun. We are looking for crew chiefs with the best likelihood for gains. So names like Rodney Childers, Alan Gustafson, other front runners like that, we're probably not going to say them out loud. Alan might. I don't know. That's on him. But the best strategy in this draft is to pick crew chiefs who we know are competent race callers, so say their numbers, who have the most to gain from green flag pit stops. So, Alan, are you ready?
I am ready. Okay. Let's do it. I've done my research. I'm going to win this year. I mean, at first I didn't want to put the podcast in danger and embarrass the brains behind it, which is David Smith, but I'm ready to do it now. I'm ready to throw down the gauntlet and just win this game. So it's going to be good.
I think our legions of listeners are rooting for you. So don't delve too deep into some villain monologue. Okay. All right. So I have got a dollar coin minted in 1974. I am going to flick it in the air. Alan, you do the honors of calling.
Tails never fails.
It is. Ooh, it's heads.
Oh,
ooh, I won it. Okay.
Does that mean you get first pick?
Yes, I will take the first pick.
Ooh,
and how this operates snake style, if you're not familiar with any kind of fantasy sports games, I'll go, Alan will take two, I'll take two, and that's how we round out our four. But yeah, wow, okay, all right. I get first pick.
Dun dun dun.
First pick in the 2021 Positive Regression Crew Chief Draft, Mike Shiplett.
Oh, damn it.
Stuart Haas Racing on behalf of Cole Custer. Alan, here are the highlights. Mike Shiplett gained 109 total positions last year for rookie Cole Custer. 34 of those took place on road courses, and that was the most among all crew chiefs. So I like his past. I kind of dig his future. Shiplett was very much a rookie Cup Series crew chief. I mean, by definition, it was his first year at the helm of a Cup team, but slowest car among SHR's four. And outside of Preferred Groove restarts, Cole Custer really struggled in attempting to score track position. So this 41 team needs Mike Shiplett to perform this specific task at the level he previously did, because until Custer begins to improve, I'm sure he will. The signs are there, but it's not there yet. This green flag pit cycles are a necessary crutch for track position.
I'm in 100% agreement. I will show you my draft board later. Mike Shiplett was number one, David. I'm only proud of myself because I have the same exact way of thinking when it comes to those road courses. We've covered and talked about that, and you've written about the Stuart Haas cars aren't going to be great or don't make me project to be great on the road courses. So that would only offer more opportunity, having more road courses on the schedule, to need to procure track position. That's only going to pad those stats. So I am sad I did not get Mike Shiplett. He was my number one overall.
Yeah, I kind of felt that he was sort of, I mean, there are going to be some other good names we're going to throw out here, but it did feel like a clear number one after what we saw last year. That MO was there for them. And look, I mean, he won a race and qualified into the playoffs last season, but I think that this is a team that's still thinks of itself as a playoff contender, and they're going to treat the regular season as such. And that is gunning for stage points. And when that is your target, you're going to rack up spots on green flag pit cycles because that is low hanging fruit. So I'm optimistic with my number one pick. Alan, you're up. You've got two back to back. Who you got?
Back to back. I'm going with old reliables here. Well, first of all, for the number two pick in the 2021 Positive Regression Motorsports Analytics Crew Chief Draft, Drew Blickensterfer goes over to Team Kavana. David, wow. Drew Blickensterfer led the series last year in green flag pit cycle positions. 126 positions he picked up for his driver. 127 of those were on the standard ovals. David, that 127 positions on standard ovals, like the normal tracks picking up that many positions, that was 41 positions more than the next on the list. He cleared the field when it comes to the standard tracks, if you will, that are on the circuit. So I am leaning back in to that, since there are, you know, it's still predominantly ovals. I know there are more road courses, but I can't ignore what Drew Blickensterfer did last year with his decision-making on the ovals, with Michael McDowell. Coincidentally, as you've written about and pointed out, I believe front row and Michael McDowell had their best seasons ever last year in the sport. Some of that has to do with the additional track position being delivered by the crew chief. Does that mean there could be potential regression? Of course, but I think there will be more opportunities out there, and I'm going with what we know from last year and sticking with Drew Blick, and he is my number two. He's my first pick for my team this year. What do you think?
Okay. Was that your number two on your board, and you're just going best pick available?
It was, yes.
Okay. Well, you know what? Look, he's got a fantastic last name. It's German. A microbrewery would name a beer, you know, Blickensdörfer, if they were trying too hard. I think his dad reads Motorsports Analytics. He's really proud of his son. That's cool. But I got to tell you, Alan, I can see how this tally from last year takes a big drop. Michael McDowell is a road course product, and he fancies himself something of an expert. These road course races during the regular season might offer the only ticket to the playoffs for Front Row Motorsports, but that's if they win them. So I would argue that stage points on the road courses do them no good because there aren't enough points available, stage points available. They're not going to be running so good as to be in that conversation of a pit don't pit for stage points when they're running at, say, Michigan. I think it's all or nothing on the road courses. That is my only trepidation. I have him on my big board, but I have him lower than you do solely because of that. In the two road course races last season, they dropped 12 spots across two races on the road course. It was really the only blemish on Blickensdörfer's record.
That's I factored that in. I promise I did.
Only hesitation that I have.
Yeah, I factored that in, but I still thought the hunt, you know, the 125 plus positions gained, it was too big to ignore. That's why he was my first pick.
Okay. All right. Well, you got number three, so you can have a pretty significant duo here. Who's your second pick for Team Allen?
This one may be a little safe, but it's old, reliable, Mr. Consistency, especially if you've listened to the crew chief draft in the past. David, I'm sticking with Trent Owens, crew chief for Mr. Ryan Preece. This is like drafting Ezekiel Elliott or drafting Julio Jones in your fantasy football draft. Sure, there are bigger names. Sure, there are, you know, hotter names going into a year. But if you just want consistent production, you go with a name like Trent Owens. And I think he gets it done. He wasn't, again, not the sexiest pick last year. Maybe a little bit down on the charts. I think sixth overall last year. 63 positions gained over green flag pit cycles on the year. 12 of those were lost on drafting tracks. Maybe that's a fluke. Maybe that turns itself around this year and the numbers go back up. But as a good safety pick, I don't think it ever hurts to have someone who has excelled at pit decisions in the past. That's why Trent Owens is my second pick for Team Kavana.
I will never knock a Trent Owens pick.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, everything that you said is true. Entering year two with Ryan Preece, it was interesting this week during the Daytona 500 media availabilities to hear Preece say this is his first time in his NASCAR national career to have the same crew chief for a second year in a row. That is interesting to me. Just 17 spots gained across the two road course races. I actually like Preece a little more than most on road courses. I like this pick. You're right. When you said safe pick, not the sexiest name. He is not going to sell magazines, but... Yeah, I mean, you can't go wrong with Trent Owens because he delivers every single damn season. The guy's like clockwork.
All right, David, my 1, 2, and three are off the top of my board, and now it is up to you. You have picks 4 and 5 in the crew chief draft.
Okay. Oh wow. All right. I think I'm going to be able to get my 1, 2, and 3 on the big board here. My second pick. Pick number 4 overall will be Scott Graves.
Boom!
crew chief for Ryan Newman. 13 green flag pit cycles last year with gains of five or more spots. Alan, no other crew chief had more than Scott Graves.
Wow.
And I think, again, this is going to be the prevailing theme of this year's draft, the road courses. Yep. There is an overarching need for positions for this number six Roush Fenway team, specifically on the road courses. Ryan Newman, over the last two seasons, ranks as the least efficient road course passer in the Cup Series. And Graves, he has become an old reliable, but he has, since joining Ryan Newman, this has been the focus. They are just going after low-hanging points when they can get them. Any kind of track position, that's where Ryan Newman excels, really. Like, when he's in sniffing distance for a halfway decent finish, I feel like he can go and get that finish. And I think Graves recognizes that as well. So I think that's going to be a focal point this year, and what's going to be a pivotal season for Ryan Newman, free agent season for Ryan Newman. Has a lot to gain on road courses. I think Scott Graves can help him get there.
All right. Good picks. So, you have another one. I apologize. So
I do. Yes.
I'm just stunned. No, I'm stunned. My brain is a fog here because I went into this draft. I promise. I really did think about these road courses, David. And now you have two great picks in terms of with great road course numbers. And I do not. So anybody who's ever done a fantasy football draft before has gone in with a plan and immediately got punched in the mouth. And I'm just, my brain is, I don't know what I'm going to do. And you have another pick, so I'm even more scared. So I'm sorry, go on.
Okay, my third pick for Team David will be Ryan Sparks.
Oh, good.
Crew chief on, that's not good. You're going to regret this. Crew chief for Corey LaJoy. He moves with Corey LaJoy from Go Fast Racing to Spire Motorsports. Sparks gained LaJoy 74 positions all in last year. That was the fourth most among all crew chiefs. 39 of them were on non-drafting ovals. 28 were on road courses. And I had the opportunity to speak with Sparks exclusively last year for an article. And he was adamant that strategy is the cog for them. And I don't envision that changing. Yes, Corey LaJoy isn't pedaling a decade old Carl Edwards car anymore. He's going to have a slight improvement at Spire, but a tangible improvement in the running whereabouts by Spire in a lame duck season for this car is something that I do not expect. So last year's playbook remains active, I think, and Sparks seems to be well on his way. He is really a top of the line strategist for the back half of the field, and I actually kind of dig his star trajectory. I think he's going to continue on.
Good stuff, and again, a recognizable name when it comes to the crew chief draft. So, longtime listeners, that's probably not a surprise. He did not make my board this year because of the team change, but I do like that they are still paired together. A driver team, a driver crew chief team like that, being on the same wavelength about procuring positions and stuff, that is important when everyone is in agreement. So it is a good pick, David. It just wasn't on my board. That's why I was happy to hear that.
Okay. All right. So you got two back-to-back now.
I got two back-to-back. Well, I'm going to try to redeem myself a little bit and go back to this road course strategy. And I'm going to go, I'm going full, you know, full JTG over here. I'm going with Brian Patty, crew chief for Ricky Stenhouse, who pairs with Mr. Owens. One major reason, I think I've drafted Brian Patty before, but one major reason, David, is the road courses. You look back on 2020, Brian Patty was one of those crew chiefs that gained plus 32 positions across the road course races in 2020. Again, I'm just following simple logic. More road courses, more opportunity for gains. So I'm hoping that just happens. And, you know, he's not a slouch by any means on normal tracks. Last year, Brian Patty lost 26 positions in green flag pit cycles during drafting tracks. So again, maybe that's one of those anomalies. I'm betting a lot on things that hopefully turn around, like losing green flag positions on drafting tracks. Like maybe that turns around. My team is banking on that. So let's just hope that happens. But Brian Patty is my pick.
Yeah, and I can understand why you would go in that direction. The only critique that I have of Patty's decision making is, if I were going to compare him to, you know, a baseball player, he's a high home run guy. He's also a high strikeout guy. And I look at that retention rate for Stenhouse last year, 56.1% was below the series wide rate, just barely over half the time Stenhouse is keeping his spot that he relinquishes during a green flag pit cycle. That's my only bugbear, but I can see it. And going full JTG, not a bad strategy, man. I think you're catching on. So I think you're going to be formidable with those two for sure.
Excellent. All right. Got one more pick. And I'm glad you mentioned total retention in terms of keeping your position, because I did pay attention to that. Not exactly on the Brian Patty pick. I know he was low, but under that metric, I'm going with a name that, look, I'll be honest, I had to look up, but the numbers, David, do not lie. And because of this, I'm going with Clinton Cram of Timmy Hill fame, crew chief for Timmy Hill. Last year, 88.24% of the time, they retained position, gained 34 positions over green flag pit cycles, and yet another crew chief that did very well on the road courses, 29 positions last year over those road course races. I'll say it again to repeat, just the logic, more road course races, more opportunity to make positive gains. I'm going with Clinton Cram on the 66 car.
That is your wildest wild card pick to date, I think.
Is it though? I mean, if you took away the names and just look at the numbers, I mean, it just stands out. Why wouldn't you pick that?
What if he's not the crew chief?
I know. I was worried about that. I was looking up on J-Ski and just trying to double confirm. Probably should have called the team. I mean, I am a journalist after all, I'll admit. But I probably should have done a little more research. But I just went with the numbers, David. The numbers don't lie unless he's not even on the team.
No, I understand. And you have to understand, when you are that deep in the field, it is easier to gain spots in theory, right? That's what we are always told. Except some of these crew chiefs very clearly aren't seeing opportunities for position gains. Credit to Clinton Cram, he did. And there were very few. I actually want to make sure. Yeah. So he had just 9 pit cycles in which he gained 2 or more spots. I'm going to guess he didn't have very many opportunities to gain multiple spots. So to borrow a Corey LaJoy phrase, Clinton Cram is over here stacking pennies on behalf of Timmy Hill. And you know what, Alan, that it might work. It honestly might work for you in that regard. Maybe he stays the crew chief for the entire year, or he goes elsewhere. I don't know. We're going to see. This could come back to haunt you, but as far as, you know, trusting your process, I do give you a bravo.
Well, good. Well, thank you very much. I'm rolling the dice here. I took big risks, big swings. Hopefully they pay off. David, you have one more pick to end the crew chief draft, the third annual positive regression crew chief draft. One more pick to end it. Who you got?
I'm going to throw in a wild card pick myself. Travis Mack, crew chief for Daniel Suarez at Trackhouse Racing. Alan, no Xfinity Series driver gained more positions during green flag pit cycles last season than the 35 that Travis Mack supplied Michael Annette. Mm. And in Travis's first go-round as a Cup Series crew chief, it was for Levine Family Racing, he tried a lot of things. It got really weird and ultimately frustrating to the point that LFR let him go. But when I say weird, 60% of his attempts at gains or losses under green took place extremely early in the cycle or extremely late. And that 60% unorthodox mark was the highest in the series by a landslide. Positionally speaking, it didn't yield much at all. He actually incurred a 15-position loss on behalf of Casey Kane. LFR parted ways with Mack, but Mack is back on behalf of Daniel Suarez. It's a full-blown Chevrolet effort. And Suarez, judging by his track position output the last few years, needs this kind of safety net. And I think Michael Annette, to where he was in the Xfinity series compared to Daniel Suarez, where he is in the Cup series, I think it's a seamless fit for Travis Mack. I think that can, at least that attitude, those goals, those can carry. And I think it'll just be fun to keep note of a new race team on the track. So Travis Mack is pick number 4 for Team David.
Love the pick. I love the research and reasoning behind it. I wish I could think outside the box as you did, going down to the other series, thinking back to the 95, because all the evidence is there, right? That this could be a positive pick for something like what we are doing, going to a team that will need a little help. With the brain power of someone who's shown they can procure track positions through green flag pit cycles. I hate to say it, David, great pick. Good job.
I think it'll be a fun contest this year. We'll have to check back in maybe around the halfway mark, see how things are going. And then the end of the year, one of us will have bragging rights. If it's you, you're going to do an awful lot of bragging.
Quick review. David drafted Mike Shiplett, Scott Graves, Ryan Sparks, and Travis Mack. I drafted Drew Blickensderfer, Trent Owens, Brian Patty, and Clinton Cram. I guarantee this is the only podcast you will ever hear that mentions all of those names, and especially in the most positive of ways. So best of luck to you, David. Best of luck to all these crew chiefs. We're looking for green flag pit stops. Next up, David, a little free agency talk, because we got some news this week. We knew going into 2021, there were some big names looking for a new contract and would-be free agents. Well, one of them, at least, is off the board. Denny Hamlin re-signs with Joe Gibbs Racing, as does FedEx. Terms not disclosed, but according to some reports, it is at the very least a multi-year deal, so more than just 1 year. David, Denny Hamlin coming off a career year, just after his age 39 season. You got to figure he is in his prime. Are we surprised by Denny Hamlin's extension? I certainly am not. As I said, he's prime of his career. Again, it's not a 5-year deal. It sounds like a 2, maybe at least when they say multi-year, you think 2 years. That's a great bet on both sides. And I don't know. How do you look at it, David?
Well, I'm not surprised. For one, Dave Alpern last year during a media availability said that Joe Gibbs Racing, the manner in which they treat their in-house free agents is that if they are planning to re-sign them, they would prefer to get that business out of the way. They do not want their elite drivers going into a year on an expiring deal. So no shock there about the timing. But Hamlin returning to JGR, I don't think that's a surprise either, Alan, honestly, because when elite drivers are on expirings with rich race teams, right, we'll call JGR that, then it becomes a pretty easy exercise. You can just kind of connect the dots, but the team holds all the leverage, right? But from the driver's point of view, there are two questions that need to be answered. Firstly, does the driver really want a change in scenery? And secondly, how bad do they want that change in scenery? Are they willing to take a hefty pay cut to make that change? If the answer to any of those questions is no, then this is a negotiation with an obvious end result. I mean, you can negotiate back and forth all day, but you know what the final answer is going to be. Denny Hamlin had a fully operational championship contending race team built around him. And the only place that he would logically go would be, I think, the very team he co-owns. And since that team is in its infancy and it would require substantial funding to support him in what I'm guessing would be a second car to Bubba Wallace at 2311 Racing. And it's not totally clear that he'd even get that funding in a timely manner, so timely that he would use it as leverage in a negotiation, then yes, stay put at JGR for as long as they're willing to have you.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure Denny Hamlin, the owner, wants to pay what Denny Hamlin's salary should be. So smart decision. No, really, though, a smart decision on all parts, right? Brad Keselowski, another pending free agent. David, he had great things to say this week just in terms of the market. Yes, driver salaries are lower than they have been in the past, but look, Brad rightly pointed out there is a small group of drivers that consistently win multiple races each year. Brad is one of them, as he liked to point out, but so is Denny. I mean, if you are Joe Gibbs Racing, you don't get rid of a Denny Hamlin because there aren't many others out there to go get. So this is a win for all sides.
Yeah, and I think it was the correct move for JGR to make as well, because, you know, through the organization's actions, JGR has made it abundantly clear that it's an organization built to win right now. And everything that you said sort of falls in line with that. They want to win right now, every year, meaning there's zero desire for a quote unquote rebuild. JGR does not want to be in the business of developing young drivers. Not really, right? Because they didn't have time for Joey Logano or Daniel Suarez or Eric Jones. No real desire to be this inroad for Toyota's pipeline. We talked about this last year. Toyota wants JGR to be the Oakland A's. JGR thinks of itself as the New York Yankees. Win right now. And honestly, outside of Brad Keselowski, because he was the only other guy, but that would be a radical change, Hamlin was the obvious choice just to continue on in the 11 car. And he's the choice that JGR knows. He's a linchpin for a team that's been to the championship for two straight seasons. You know, I might say that he was sort of the cog in a team that outperformed its JGR brethren last season. If you think about it, remove him, JGR has two wins, one with Kyle Busch, one with Martin Truex. And also, Alan, if not for Denny Hamlin, Toyota as a manufacturer would not have had any representation in any of the Championship Fours, wow, Cup, Xfinity, or Trucks last year in Phoenix. So if you want to remain relevant, you might want to lock down the guy that single-handedly kept you relevant for a year. And you've talked about the terms of the deal. We can, based on what we've read, we can ascertain that it's at least through 2023. Hamlin's going in the opposite direction of 40, but it won't be so much of a fall off that it's just plain bad. And we mentioned last week, Harvick bringing funding to avoid becoming an albatross if things turned in that direction. Denny Hamlin, if he's getting paid by Joe Gibbs Racing, Alan, keep in mind he's turning right back around and paying JGR for access to their program for his race team. So there's a lot of money flowing back and forth between the two. I think this was just a logical thing to play out.
Yeah, and I don't think we can point out enough. I mean, the point that you bring up in terms of what JGR is actually looking for, you know, there's all this young talent out there that Toyota develops, but if Denny Hamlin signs for two more years, I mean, that's two more years of a cup ride that's not being filled by this young driver. So that just reiterates the strategy that you've talked about JGR, about, yes, there's all this young and upcoming talent, but that's not who wins, right? Denny Hamlin is the type of driver who wins, and that's what JGR wants right now, even if you've tied him up for 2 years or potentially more.
Yeah. I mean, what it comes down to is, unless you're just going to go and you're going to get one of those six or seven drivers that wins multiple races over the course of a season, are you going to replace Denny with Brad Keselowski? Are you going to go get Chase Elliott? Because outside of that, that's a steep drop. And I think at one point you're asking the question, who would you rather have in a car, a 42-year-old Denny Hamlin or a 24-year-old Harrison Burton? This organization competes for championships, and Joe Gibbs, Super Bowl winning head coach, will tell you rings bling, flags fly forever. That's what they're gunning for. And Hamlin's the pick to make.
Rings bling. Love it. So Denny's off the board. We know Brad's still out there. Martin Truex Jr., who, you know, we were talking about JGR not liking to have free agents too far out there. With Denny off the board, does this mean anything else for the free agent crop that is out there? Does it affect it at all?
I don't think so. Firstly, I'll point that the open market value page is updated on motorsportsanalytics.com, and it contains a handy little free agent tracker for 2022. So feel free to bookmark that. And yeah, the first move is in. Hamlin's off the board. That means the most valuable driver is off the board. And Martin Truex, Brad Keselowski, Kurt Busch file in after him. But does Hamlin affect anything? I truly don't think so. Because if I'm a betting man, things are going to be pretty boring at the top. And there's two things that we need to consider here. Firstly, are the pay cuts. They're going to continue. I've talked with team decision makers. I've talked with driver agents and representatives. Both say that driver salaries are on the way down. If a driver salary was not altered last year as a result of COVID, it probably will be this year. And when both sides of the aisle or the negotiating table are telling me this, then it's a good bet to be true. It will certainly come to the driver's dismay. We have gone from the cigarette era, Alan. Rick Mast owned an airplane. Mike Skinner owned mansions, plural, right? None of them had Cup Series wins between them. And now we've moved to a place where elite drivers are worth less than $10 million a year on the open market, based solely on production. The owners were successful in that regard. Kurt Busch told me this was a more unionized effort when I spoke to him for a Forbes article. The owners have all the leverage. And if any elite drivers change teams, it will be for markedly less money than they would have gotten if they had stayed put. So that's one thing. The second thing here is, and I want our listeners to think about this, there is no disruptor in the market this year, no disruptor among the free agent crop. And if you look down this list, it's a fine list. Matt DiBenedetto, Eric Almirola, Alex Bowman, but no disrespect to them. No one is overhauling its operation for Matt DiBenedetto. You know, I'm sorry, but last year, Kyle Larson was thought to be that guy. Bubba Wallace probably became that guy. And even if there is a revelation within the 2022 free agent crop, whether it's Ross Chastain or Ryan Preece, you know, those two, I feel like, have the ability to go out this year and perform well enough to make themselves richer, but it's difficult to see them forcing this big paradigm shift in which we see a series-wide shuffle of drivers. So I'm always looking at the rosy side, but I think it's going to be a pretty bland transaction season, but we got to see how it plays out.
Wah, wah. Well, no, but what do you think about the logic that Brad Keselowski brought up? I mean, there's only so many drivers that can win you races. Can't that help you out in terms of some money? Or is the market that, what do you say, controlled? Or is that the right word? But I mean, is the market that low if there's such a small group of drivers you'd actually want, though? That's got to benefit the driver at some point, no?
Yeah, I would flip that around. Just to play devil's advocate, I would flip that around and say there's only a small number of rides that would get you to those numbers.
Yeah, well, so
for him, you know, if Rick Hendrick didn't want to pay him his commensurate amount last year, what's going to change this year? What would be the root cause to boot Alex Bowman out of that ride? The devil you know seems to be the devil that teams go with. So, I mean, if I just think it's going to be history repeating itself. I think Brad Keselowski is going to be negotiating to an audience of one, essentially. I think Roger Penske sort of can just do whatever he wants and potentially throw a number out there because most organizations aren't going to be willing to match it or better it. And I don't know that many more organizations have as plum of a ride ready for Keselowski, who, by the way, is entering his prime statistical seasons, and he does not want them to go to waste with a second or third tier team.
Interesting stuff. 2021 season hasn't even started yet, and we're already knocking down the free agent dominoes. Good stuff. Good episode, David. Don't forget, we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Podbean, Luminary, and TuneIn. We're available no matter your device. Our entire back catalog of episodes is available for free at PosRecPod. Make sure you check that out. If you like what you're hearing, please leave us a rating or a review. That kind of stuff helps wonders in spreading the word about us, about this podcast. Of course, we notice, and it's so very appreciated. If you have any questions, we'd love to hear them. Reach out on Twitter at PosRegPod, PosRegPod. We love answering your questions because they're so smart. They're so good. David, you're always working on something. What are you working on?
So much on motorsportsanalytics.com. More SWOT analyses, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats are on the way. Joe Gibbs Racing, Chip Ganassi Racing, and Roush Fenway Racing, they're next on the docket for those. So if you've been enjoying them, you got three more coming. And if you're looking for a jumping on point as a patron of Motorsports Analytics, the $5 a month option will get you started right for the beginning of the 2021 Cup Series season. I have peer projections for more than 40 drivers ready to roll. I have production splits by track type and regular season versus playoffs from last year. I have track type specific passing numbers from last year, track type specific green flag pit cycle output, which is the very thing you heard us talking about in this episode. I've got all that. And for the first time ever, I have posted track type specific restart splits from last year. So check that out. The beginning of the season, no better time to do that. Motorsportsanalytics.com. If you just want to be a smarter fan, if you're playing fantasy, I'm here to help. I've got you covered. This has become a full-blown advertisement, but really, truly, there is no better time to make this leap than right now. So by all means, consider it.
Lots of value, lots of knowledge, so make sure you check that out. Check out, I've been all around, David. You'll hear me on Sirius Radio from time to time. That's always fun to fill in. Check out my new YouTube page, Alan Cavana Media, youtube.com/AlanCavanaMedia. Some good stuff on there, trying to relearn and, you know, knock the dust off some of the editing skills. So it's been fun, though. It's been fun to hear from drivers. It's been fun to post that stuff and just get the stories out there. So keep updated and follow me on Twitter at Alan Cavana. And of course, make sure you keep it to and listen to every episode of Positive Regression. David, another great episode. Look forward to next week. By then, we will have a race to preview. That's how close we are to the season. So thank you, everybody, for listening. For David Smith, I'm Alan Cavana. Stay positive.